This is next.
Good evening and welcome to City Visions. I'm tonight's guest host, Ethan Elkind. With the Bay Area's population growing at a rapid pace and increasing numbers of residents choosing public transportation, how long before the current transportation infrastructure reaches a breaking point? BART, the system that hundreds of thousands of Bay Area residents rely on for their daily commutes, is projected to reach absolute capacity within the next two decades. And with the Bay Bridge also suffering some of the worst traffic in the nation, how will commuters reach their destinations in a timely manner? It is issues like these that have caused several prominent local organizations and public officials to call for the construction of a second Transbay crossing. Is the time ripe for such a significant undertaking? Where should a new crossing be placed? What form should it take, and how will we pay for it? Joining me tonight to discuss these issues and more are Ratna Amin, Transportation Policy Director at SPUR, a San Francisco Bay Area Planning and Urban Research Association. Ratna leads SPUR's work to create a high-quality transportation system in San Francisco, Oakland, San Jose, and the Bay Area region. Her areas of focus include public transit, land use, and transportation integration. She was named to Mass Transit Magazine's Top 40 Under 40 in 2015. Welcome, Ratna.
Thank you, Ethan.
And we also are joined by Jeffrey Heller, president of Heller Manis Architects, which he founded in 1984. He's a leader in the profession and green movement with some of the first sustainable architecture and large-scale urban planning projects in the U.S. and China. Jeff also serves on several boards, including the Bay Area Council, a business group that helped launch the original BART system, and where he co-chairs the Transportation Committee. He's the architect of 181 Fremont, a new 54-story high-rise currently under construction in the Transbay neighborhood, as well as the Emeryville Amtrak station. Welcome, Jeff.
Thank you.
And finally, we're joined by Rebecca Saltzman, a director on the BART board since 2012, representing District 3, which includes parts of Alameda and Contra Costa counties. Rebecca co-chairs the BART AC Transit Interagency Liaison Committee, and she serves on the Alameda County Transportation Commission and the Capital Corridor Joint Powers Authority. Before she was elected, Director Saltzman spent years as a public transit and policy advocate, coalition builder, grassroots organizer, and manager with local, state, and national issue-based organizations. Welcome, Rebecca.
Thanks.
And we also want to invite you, our listeners, to join the conversation by dialing 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. Or you can email us now at cityvisions@kalw.org, or post a comment on kalw.org, or tweet us at cityvisionskalw. And so now on to our guests in the conversation. So both SPUR and the Bay Area Council have issued white papers calling for a second Transbay crossing. And Ratna, I want to start with you. SPUR is a longtime local think tank devoted to these issues. What were the conclusions that your report came to?
We came to several conclusions about the need for a second crossing through this research. They included the fact that our first crossing only has limited room for growth and capacity, that it's lacking in redundancy when it shuts down for an hour or longer, and we're going to need longer shutdowns to do needed repairs in the tube. And we also recognized that many, if not most, of the cities of the Bay Area want to grow around transit. And we need to imagine a much more transit-oriented future for ourselves with a more robust and resilient transportation network.
And Jeff, the Bay Area Council also came out with a report on this subject. What were some of those conclusions, and did they differ at all from what SPUR came to?
No, I don't think there's a lot of difference. I think that what the Bay Area Council is coming to realize in the last year or so, and we're really accelerating the way we view the actions we have to take, is that the lifeblood of the region is really based on quality of life and intellectual capacity, which have drawn people here from the post-World War II era, housing and transportation. And the great threats right now to the quality of life and the business structure is both a housing crisis and a transportation crisis. And as we have realized this in a greater proportion, we also see the integration of the two issues. I have been focusing on the transportation issue and the second BART tube for about 3 years now. And I think it is probably in the series of steps that we have to take one of the most vital. Of course, everything boils down to one issue, and that is money.
So obviously an important business need that you are seeing in terms of trying to relieve this transportation challenge at the very least. So, Rebecca, you sit on the BART board. How bad is it? I mean, what are the current ridership statistics in terms of that the Transbay sort of choke point for the BART system? How much worse is it going to get? What can we expect in the future?
Well, I think this next year in particular is going to be difficult until we start getting more train cars. Right now, you see the trains. I came the opposite way from Oakland to San Francisco this evening, so it wasn't so bad. But I saw the trains on the other side, and they're extremely crowded during the commute hours. You can barely move right now. So until those new trains start coming next year, it's going to be very crowded. And even when those new trains come, it'll still stay crowded. We do have a plan at BART to drastically increase the capacity of the Transbay tube, but that is limited. So with getting new train cars, and we have a plan, especially if our bond measure passes in November, to get a new train control system, we can increase the capacity of the tube by 36%. So that will be a lot of relief over the next 5, 10, 15 years, 20 years. But we do need a further plan in the future for something like a second Transbay tube.
And Ratna, you mentioned some of the benefits that could be brought about with having a second Transbay too. But for those who are sort of new to thinking about this, can you sort of make the case for some of the other benefits that the region could get if we actually were able to build this second tube?
Yeah. Well, first I want to add to help answer that, add to something that Rebecca said, which is we are hopefully going to pass the BART bond this year, which will put us farther on the path to increasing capacity in the existing tube by 36%. But what we're not accounting for, I think, very well is all the trips that aren't being made because of the conditions on transit today. And so we really need to think about what we want transit to actually feel like, how often you actually want the train to come, and what we need to keep our region a livable and social place and set our bar that high. So to answer your question, we should really be thinking about how well we want people to access opportunity. The Bay Area has jobs in a lot of different places, and they're growing in kind of unpredictable ways in different cities. And so we need to be able to have a transit system that lets people access opportunity from wherever they are and across their whole family. And that's the kind of transit system we need, not yesterday's transit system just tuned up. So there's the economic mobility and the ability for employers to grow and know that they're people can actually get to work in a reliable way. And then there's the environmental benefits. If we do this right, it helps us support more walkable neighborhoods and get people moving around out of cars. And frankly, we've mostly run out of room for cars. We mm-hmm. can make some incremental improvements, but a lot of cities are kind of rejecting the idea of more cars on the streets, even if they're driverless and even if they're shared.
And Jeff, you talk about doing it right. Jeff, I wanted to ask you, this is, you know, I say going to be new to a lot of people thinking about this second tube. What exactly are we talking about in terms of design? How do we do this right? What are some of the options, in terms of is this going to be an actual BART-only type of tube, or are we thinking about other rail that might fit in there, or other types of transit capacity, or is it even going to be a tube?
Well, the answer to that question is actually a fairly long answer, so bear with me for a second. I just came back from a meeting with Mayor Sam Liccardo down in San Jose just before this, and needless to say, the driving experience reinforced the previous comments about the dead end of trying to improve our road system. We must have an effective public transportation system. And the interesting thing about the conversation with him was that he was talking about BART to San Jose and then even dreaming of the idea of it being connected back up through San Mateo County. And in fact, that conversation is the plan that BART had in 1957, which was to loop the bay and further. And so someday we may realize that. Part of that, an important part of that, is the Transbay tube, between Oakland and San Francisco. And on a design and planning level, the big benefits from that are, number one, relief of the pressure. There are presently about 446,000 riders on BART per day. It makes its ridership 10 times almost the ridership of Caltrain, for example. Just in terms of magnitude, it's one of our most important systems. It's probably our most important public system. There are parts of Oakland that are underserved by public transit. There are parts of San Francisco that are now growing and developing, the whole south of Market area all the way down through Mission Bay, that are underserved. And there are great opportunities by running a second BART tube to regenerate those areas and relieve the pressure off the primary tube, which I believe a second tube is essential to a successful future. At the same time, it's not the only thing. We do need a grand scheme for the Bay region, and the grand scheme has to take into account the future of high-speed rail, the future of the modernization and electrification upgrade of Caltrain. But in my view, those are of equal importance, but later in time. So any engineering of the tube or tubes across the bay has to be seen in a practical way having to do with funding. And therefore, the BART tube, I think, has to absolutely be the first tube.
And Rebecca, you're representing an area in the East Bay that would be feeding into the tube. What is your sense of the potential for the route alignment as one example of that? Where would how would this connect to BART from the East Bay? And what are you hearing from your constituents, if anything, about this?
I think it's early to decide the actual route, and we need to study that. It's exciting to hear people interested in this. We have a lot of just folks out there who are creating draft alignments, and it's great to have a lot of people thinking about it and pushing for different alignments, but we'll have to be really thoughtful and make sure we make the decision based on ridership and projected potential ridership and depending where the cities in the next decade or so are doing dense development. So it's going to depend on a lot of things, and I think it's way too early to find out. So I appreciate that some of the studies have been more open about, where we're going to exactly align it. So we'll just have to see where the development happens.
Can you give any examples of where some of these proposals might be, just like you've been hearing, just to give listeners some sort of concrete idea of what it might look like?
I think, in Oakland, a lot of people have been pushing for the 980 alignment and going into Jack London Square and then to Alameda. The 980 is a freeway that's not used very much and probably should be torn down whether there's a BART tube there or not. So that could be, that could work well together, but we need to see if the development potential is there. And then we also have to think about how a second tube would impact the ridership of or the service of what we have today. So we don't want to divert too much service from downtown Oakland, for example, to another alignment that's parallel because there's a lot of development happening in downtown Oakland. So we have to be really thoughtful and think about the trade-offs and wherever we put the second tube.
And Retina, has Spur given thought about optimal alignments and design of the tube? I mean, Jeffrey's saying that's we definitely want it to be a BART tube and then maybe think about the funding. But is Spur thinking differently along those lines?
Well, I will agree with Rebecca that we need a study. And one of our major recommendations is we've got to get going because it's not enough to have advocates and hobbyists coming up with alignments. We actually need an official table where everyone can sit together and present their interests and concerns about the future. We, in our white paper, present some of the choices that sound more, from what we understand, more viable connections. So in the West Bay, you could connect to the new Transbay Transit Center, and those would be high-speed rail or Caltrains in the future coming through, not conventional BART technology. And or you could connect south of there or into the Mission Bay area or tunnel and connect with the Market Street segment of the BART system. That would be a BART connection. Those are just some of the ideas, and those lines could continue in farther into the city. And on the East Bay side, there's a 980 suggestion that's come out, and there is their ideas to, most of them go through Alameda or the Jack London area and then go to another line next to in downtown Oakland, or you can connect farther south on that Fremont line, maybe around Fruitvale. And these are things that have begun to be studied by various agencies, but I think we need a lot more information to compare them. But the what happens at the street level is critical. Are we connecting at places that make sense to connect, and are there already nodes of activity or going to be? We don't need more hubs that are hard to get to and not that useful.
Mm-hmm. So we're talking a lot about BART, and you had mentioned other types of transit that's potentially available, high-speed rail. So Jeff Heller, I'm interested in your thoughts about how this might fit into that bigger transit picture. What would your sort of ideal to be that would serve the different modes of transit that we have in the Bay Area?
Well, first let me say Rebecca and Rana's comments about alignment. You'll notice that there is there is kind of a good sense of generally how this might be addressed. And I agree completely in the opinion of that there has to be a convening of a serious body. I'd like to say that, in my personal opinion, that MTC should be the overseeing agency for this. They are the regional transportation agency, and as you know, that's not a thing that's set in stone. It's a flexible, fungible organizational structure, but we will need. And I don't think anybody would disagree with, we will need an overarching political structure to create the greater scheme. I think there's a lot of desire to see high-speed rail make its way across the bay in the future and get through Oakland and to Sacramento. So it makes a lot of sense. San Francisco is studying it very intensively right now. They've got this idea of translating the Caltrain route up 3rd Street, and it makes a lot of sense in plan, but it's a very difficult decision in terms of time, money, infrastructure. But when I was talking with the folks at MTC the other day about these things, they said that ultimately it all has to be sorted out, but a good plan is a good plan, and we should come up with the best plan that integrates all of these pieces. I return to the urgency of the BART issue. Personally, I believe that the second tube should take priority after we address all the other immediate problems we have. And that's a very big deal, by the way. Addressing our immediate problems, BART's immediate problems, our region's immediate problems of transportation and fixing our infrastructure, that can overwhelm us. And we have to figure out a way to get past being overwhelmed by catching up and get into planning the future and not wait forever.
So it sounds like we're very much at a preliminary stage. We're sort of get these reports out, and we're starting as a body politic here, wrap our heads around the idea of a second tube. And there's a table that people have to come together and start to hash out some of these details. So, Rebecca, you sit on the BART board. Jeff mentioned that the Metropolitan Transportation Commission, MTC, might be the place to house this. Where would this conversation go next? Who's going to do the studying? What can the public expect in terms of trying to get a little more definition on this idea?
Well, I think that hasn't been figured out yet. I think if it was going to be the MTC, BART would probably need to get a seat on the MTC for that to be the right place to do it, because BART is one of the few transit agencies that doesn't have a vote on the MTC today. But BART is moving forward. We're putting forward a bond measure in November. We haven't voted on exactly what's going to be on the bond, but with the draft plan that's come out, we've set aside $200 million in the bond for capacity-type improvements in the future, and one of those possibilities is studying a second transbay tube. Not all of the $200 million would go towards that, but we are planning to have some funding to at least start a study, and there's definitely regional conversations going on about how else to find the money for a study and then how to build it. So I think we're even in the preliminary stages of figuring out how that study would work and who would all be involved. But it would clearly need to be a lot of players in the Bay Area.
So this is City Visions on local public radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. Tonight we are discussing the benefits and obstacles to constructing a second Transbay rail crossing. We have Ratna Amin, Transportation Policy Director at SPUR, Jeffrey Heller, President of Heller Manis Architects and co-chair of the Bay Area Council Transportation Committee, and we're also joined in studio by Rebecca Saltzman, a director on the BART board since 2012, representing District 3, which includes parts of Alameda and Contra Costa counties. So we invite you to call in with your questions or comments. How do you currently commute, and are you frustrated by delays and unpredictability? Does access to public transportation influence your choice of where to live or work? And where would you like to see a new Transbay crossing placed? The number to call to join this conversation is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Or you can email us at cityvisions@kalw.org, post a comment on kalw.org, or tweet us at cityvisionskalw. So Rebecca just talked about the possibility that this could be mentioned or funded in a next bond issue for BART, this conversation around a second Transbay tube. So Ratna, I'd love to hear what SPUR has to say about what some good next steps might be to kind of get the ball rolling on this. And are you looking to that bond measure as a sort of great hope to get this process funded and launched to study this further?
The BART bond this year is definitely a really exciting opportunity to get going on this. And it looks to us like a second crossing is necessary for BART to keep serving its riders in the future, whether it's BART technology or different technology. So it makes sense for BART to be involved. But it's a much bigger issue than that, which is why it's so exciting that the mayors of Oakland and San Francisco have stepped into this, both of them, and said that this project matters for the future of our cities. And I agree that MTC has a critical role to play in this. But I think the bigger theme is we need to up our game on transit. I think we've gotten through the last 50 years of developing transit systems by doing them bit by bit, one at a time, in a pretty uncoordinated fashion, and we do funding the same way. So the next 50 years, if we're going to be a great region, just can't be more of the same. We've kind of got to go from that adolescence to an adult stage of transit. And if you look to other regions that are much more reliant on rail and are also doing major expansion of their rail systems. And by expansion, I include core systems like London, you know, building Crossrail across their cities. They're just set up to deliver a whole nother level of planning and projects. And I think we need to think about how we're going to get there.
So we have a comment from Chris from downtown Oakland who notes that there are only three tracks in downtown Oakland that needs more capacity in that part of the system, and also wondering exactly where it might go in downtown Oakland if it goes there at all. So Rebecca, I don't know if you wanted to weigh in on that, but love to hear your thoughts on capacity in Oakland and how this might help or not with that issue.
I think capacity in Oakland, we're in a much better situation than through the tube. Our stations have some issues, and particularly the two downtown Oakland stations, 19th and 12th, could use some capacity improvements, and those are things BART is looking into right now. We would really like to improve all our stations, but those are two high priorities to get some more space on those platforms because they do get quite crowded. And then just, you know, to follow up on what Ratna was saying, I really agree. And I think we need to be planning further into the future and the transit agencies all working together, because the BART tube is one part of the solution. But these big projects in the Bay Area tend to suck all the air and sometimes the money out of the room. And we need to be thoughtful about other options. In the SPUR report, it was mentioned the possibility of having a dedicated bus lane on the Bay Bridge. That would be hugely helpful. I've ridden those Transbay buses, and they take a while. And they'd have much higher ridership, and AC Transit and some of the other agencies could provide much more service if they could move more quickly. So we should be thinking about all of the ways that we're going to address the Transbay corridor.
And we actually have Chris on the line, so I apologize for asking the question for him, but I'd love to get Chris in here and just to see if that answered your question.
Hello?
Yes.
Not really. We're talking about the tube capacity. You know, most BART lines meet right in downtown Oakland. It's a natural transit hub. I understand that the downtown Oakland stations were designed to have four tracks. It only has three compared to San Francisco. And putting in that extra track, which, where does it go? It goes directly into the existing tube, would help out everybody. I'd like an answer on that.
You know, currently we don't have anywhere to then feed that extra track because the tube is at capacity in terms of how many trains per hour. Our train control system currently can't handle any more trains. So until we get a new train control system, there wouldn't be anywhere to feed those trains.
All right. Thank you, Chris, for calling in. We also have on the line James from San Francisco, who has a question. We'd like to put him on right now.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm been in San Francisco all my life, and I remember when it was a really big deal that BART came in. Who are the major stakeholders in potentially blocking or slowing this additional tube or means of transport down? And how long could this realistically take, given all how long it took us to build a replacement to the Bay Bridge? I mean, how long does it take to get things done around here? I'm amazed, and I'm a native. So I'll take my answer offline. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, James. Jeffrey Heller?
Well, a couple of pieces to that. First of all, one of the reasons the second tube is needed desperately is something that Rebecca said, is that all the lines from the East Bay, all of them from every direction, come into Oakland West. And the headway of the trains there is extremely fast. It could be a little faster, but there's nowhere else to go. So that is the limiting factor. That's the bottleneck of the system, and it's a conceptual one. It's not a technical one. So that's why the second tube is needed. As to the timing of these things, we do a lot of work in China as well as in the U.S., and I was actually on the East Bay Bridge Design Advisory Panel, and I sat through and watched that thing for 23 years. At the same time, I was telling some of the panelists before, doing the work in China, I've seen bridges that are bigger and longer get done in 2.5 years. And we always talk about our political process and that that's the way it is. But I don't believe it has to be that at all. I believe we can do things faster. I think we should have a second tube inside of a decade. And it can happen. The limiting factor is money. But I think BART is not like high-speed rail. I think that BART is part of an infrastructure which is understood all through the United States, and therefore getting the federal government to step up to help this, I think, and I know that Bay Area Council thinks, is something we really need to push on. So first, a great plan. Second, get the money. Mm-hmm. And third, make it happen in a reasonable amount of time. I'm totally on beam with that caller.
So is it just money that makes these projects take so long these days? I think the caller is exactly right. You think about how we could build the Golden Gate Bridge in, you know, less than 3 years, and you know the eastern half of the Bay Bridge could take over a decade. I mean, are there other policy prescriptions that we might need to package into this to accelerate those timelines?
It's definitely money and process. In the case of the bridge, it was not money, it was process. And we have to reform our process in California for sure. And again, at the Bay Area Council, we believe it can be done. And for priority projects like the BART tube, I'm certain that it could be accomplished. I think for the BART tube and for our transportation infrastructure, the bigger issue is the money, and the processing has to follow, but I think that can be addressed in a more easily than the money issue can.
Ratna, would you like to add to that?
I'd just like to add one thing to that, which is while we did our research, it was kind of surprising to find the difference in ambition around when we want to get this done. So first you have the expectation of how long it takes, which in the Bay Area has somehow grown to this 20 to 30 year. You ask everybody, say 20 to 30 years. That's what it takes to build something. And that's become a bit of a narrative that controls things in the Bay Area. And then there are a few people or groups that say we need it sooner. And so we actually need more people to set a goal of having in 10 years, and then we'll might be able to solve the problem. But I think we're still a long ways from building that kind of movement and excitement.
Thank you, Ratna.
And thank you, James, for the question. This is City Visions on local public radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. We're discussing tonight the benefits and obstacles to constructing a second Transbay rail crossing. And joining us in studio are Ratna Amin from Spur, Jeffrey Heller, president of Heller Manis Architects and co-chair of the Bay Area Council's Transportation Committee, and Rebecca Saltzman, director on the BART board since 2012 for District 3 in parts representing parts of Alameda and Contra Costa counties. On the line joining us is Jackie from San Francisco with a question. Jackie, welcome to City Visions.
Oh, thank you. I'm wondering, when you're trying to figure out the location for this additional Transbay tube, what do traffic studies tell you?
So I guess the question would be, are we analyzing what the impact is going to be on car congestion? Has that come up at all when we think about where the tube is going to, you know, go under the bay and then pop back out again?
Well, I was going to say it's really not that. I think that the studies that are done are really demand studies. And demand studies have to do with density of development, where people are and where they want to go. So it's not about cars or traffic or if traffic's fast or slow. It's about where is the optimal route and where are the underserved areas. And BART has a very specific catchment, if you will, and in the center of the system, it's really the urban area. So that's the part that one would focus on.
So Chris from Oakland emails in with a question. He wants to know why we don't have 24-hour BART train service, or at least extended service on Friday or Saturday nights past midnight. So I think this actually is one of the benefits that this Transbay tube is going to bring. Rebecca, do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, right now with how BART operates and how the maintenance has to happen, the middle of the night is when most of that maintenance happens. And so on the weekdays, there's very little time. There's a short window, so the kind of mid-range maintenance happens on those nights. But on the weekends, there's a bigger window because BART opens later on Saturdays and Sundays. So that's when the major work is done. If they weren't able to do that in the middle of the night, we'd have a lot more problems in the middle of the day during rush hour, having those hour-long delays, which we really want to avoid. So there are trade-offs if we made the system run later. BART did decide, the board approved last year, a study to look at some maintenance efficiencies, with one of the goals being, can we run BART just a little bit later, maybe a half hour later or something like that? We don't know what's going to happen with this study and if it's going to show that, but we're trying to look at what we can. And the other thing that BART did, which I think will be our only real option until we get a second tube, is we partnered with AC Transit to run the AC Transit all-night buses more frequently on Fridays and Saturdays. So now the 800 line runs from Richmond through Oakland to San Francisco all night on Friday and Saturday every 20 minutes. It runs on weekdays too, but at less frequency. So we're looking at other options and encouraging BART riders to look at other transit options. BART is a fast, convenient way to get around, but there are other things they can do. People can take BART in and then take the bus out. So we encourage people to look at that.
All right, so there you go, Chris. There's your answer. If you're a night owl, look for other forms of transportation, or maybe Uber or Lyft or something like that if you're trying to get home after hours. So we also have on the line Joan from San Francisco. Welcome, Joan, to City Visions.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. I was just curious whether Caltrans is going to be the builder, because obviously they don't even follow their own rules, and they've had many problems with incorrect decisions.
So we were just – thank you, Joan, for the question. We were just talking about the construction process. How do we speed this up? We know Caltrans was responsible for the new Bay Bridge, the new half of the Bay Bridge. So anyone have thoughts about whether or not Caltrans, or who would be involved in building this, I guess, is really the general question here.
Well, this is Ratna. I think that it's unlikely it would be Caltrans. It's mostly a highway building agency, and we're talking about transit infrastructure here. But, you know, the existing tube was built by BART. It was a completely closed operation. BART raised the money. BART, the organization, built it and runs BART technology. And I think as we look forward, there's a lot of discussion about other models of doing this, and it could be any of the parties that build transit in the region, but it also could be a new entity that's some sort of consortium of multiple agencies working together on this project. And another idea that's come out is making it more of a public-private partnership. And so much more of the work might be done by a private partner, and that would take on some of the risk, but also bring in a lot of resources.
Great. Well, thank you, Joan, for the question. And after just plugging rideshare services, I now get a question from Raheen in San Francisco, from Oakland, is a taxi driver. So we should also mention taxis are another option if, unfortunately, you are after hours on coming back from BART. So, Raheen, welcome to City Visions. Love to hear your question.
Yeah, I'm a San Francisco taxi driver, but I live in Oakland. And the question is, sometimes I think we forget that we live in an earthquake zone, and there's earthquakes every day. We just don't feel it. And concerning, all these constructions going on, and although it survived the 89 earthquake, all the epicenter was 2 hours south of Santa Cruz. That was my concern, that we forget there's an earthquake zone here.
So thank you for the question. I'd like to add that we also have to think about climate change impacts as well on rising sea level. So are earthquakes, I guess we could throw terrorism into the mix, rising sea levels. How are we thinking about making this kind of a safe, secure type of method of transportation?
We always think about earthquakes, especially us in the development and building inside of the world. And the earthquake codes, the seismic codes, get stronger and stronger over the years. And events like Loma Prieta actually jump the standards each time. So Ratna said something about redundancy before. Redundancy is an extremely important part. And seismic resistance of a new tube would be far greater than the old tube, just like the new East Bay span is an incredibly strong span. And going back to the comment about how you get it built, there are new boring and tunneling technologies in the world. So the doing of this would be a very sophisticated consortium, no doubt international in some level, in order to accomplish it the right way with the latest and the greatest technologies.
Well, that actually leads right into a question we just got by email from Sue, who asks, why does it have to be a tube? And you mentioned these boring machines that could tunnel underneath. The current tube, as I understand it, is basically a series of concrete sections that were dropped down into a trench in the bay floor. Do we have any thinking now about what kinds of technology we would use? Is it going to be a tunnel bore? Is it going to be one of those concrete tubes? Or could it be something above the water in a sort of bridge-like rail line?
Actually, I just had that conversation with one of the lead engineers at Arup Engineering that does a lot of the transportation studies. And he said that at this point, it's a little bit of a toss-up whether it would be sitting on the floor of the bay or whether it would be a tunnel. But the environmental impacts of sitting on the floor of the bay are greater, and the tunneling has gotten better. So there's a sense that might be the best way. Above the water is probably the least good way. It would be the most seismically vulnerable because it's kind of up in the air and up in the water. And it would also be something that would no doubt create a whole series of public issues in terms of its visual impact and how it meets the land. And going under our existing cities, going under Oakland, going under San Francisco on the south side, are going to be essential.
So I also want to talk about this big sort of elephant in the room that we've mentioned a little bit, but what about the cost? We talked about the BART bond issue coming up that potentially could help fund some preliminary studies, but what are we thinking this is going to cost? How are we going to pay for it? How should we pay for it?
We don't have actual cost estimates for this project yet, which is part of what's needed in any planning work that we begin, is to really understand what's needed from this project. But we've looked at similar projects, and I know the Bay Area Council did a lot of work on this in their white paper. And you get numbers in the $5 billion, $10 billion, $12 billion, et cetera, range. But we all know transportation projects are notorious for changing in price. In terms of how to pay for it, I think that does get into the, how you deliver the project. Who is responsible? Are we going to take this on as a region, as a state, make it federal? And also, are we going to bring in this private partner to help finance it?
Hey, I'd like to add to that. I'm going to start with a quick joke, which is one of my favorites for big projects, which is if you had ham, you could have ham and eggs if you had eggs. And the point there being that we're at a point where we don't have enough to fix what we already have properly, and we're talking about what we really need in the future. So we have to address these things sequentially, and we have to find new sources of funding. We have to raise the priority of transportation in our entire local, state, and federal budgeting process. We've got to do that in order to be able to afford these very expensive but very necessary projects. And we also have to have priorities. And I go back to what I said before, which is, in my view, the BART bond measure and the BART tube are a higher priority than others because inevitably we must face priorities.
This is City Visions on Local Public Radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at kalw.org. Tonight, we are discussing the benefits and obstacles of constructing a second Transbay rail crossing. We are joined here in the studio with Ratna Amin, Transportation Policy Director at SPUR, Jeffrey Heller of Heller Manis Architects and co-chair of the Bay Area Council's Transportation Committee, and Rebecca Saltzman, director on the BART board since 2012, representing parts of Alameda and Contra Costa counties. We also invite you to call in, our listeners, with questions or comments. We'd love to hear from you. The number to call to join is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. You can also email us at cityvisions@kalw.org. Post a comment on kalw.org or tweet us at cityvisionskalw. So we just talked a bit about costs. I'm wondering about alternatives. This is going to be an expensive project any way we look at it, even if we don't know right now. Are there more cost-effective, lower-cost alternatives, both in the short run and long run, or is this sort of the big Hail Mary that we have to get done?
I think there are a lot of short-term projects, some of which were mentioned here today, that are essential. Some of them just take money to finish the job, buying more buses, maybe for AC Transit or things like that. But some of them are policy decisions that we need to really get behind. Creating a bus lane on the Bay Bridge is a policy decision. And we first talked about it in one of our reports, I think in 2008. It's shown up in multiple plans, and yet we're not acting on it. So we're just falling more and more behind by not making these policy decisions to improve today's system. Adding ferry service is another example of something we can and must do in the short term. And also making it easier for people to switch between all those services, which is a fare policy issue.
And Rebecca, I'd love to get your take on alternatives as well. But we also have a caller who called in with a question that you wanted me to ask about this idea of having an extra track that is under the tube. Why can we use that? Are there alternatives? Are there other basic things we should be looking at, you know, before we go ahead and spend a lot of money on this kind of project?
There's no space in the tube to put another track in. So that's unfortunately not an option. I agree we need to be looking at all these shorter-term solutions and ones that can be done, you know, in just a few years, like a bus-only lane on the bridge. And we also need to be really thoughtful in our region about the land use decisions that we're making. Right now, part of the reason we have this crush load in the Transbay Tube is because we have a lot of the job growth happening in San Francisco and a lot of the housing growth happening in the East Bay. So you have all these people in the morning going from their homes in the East Bay to San Francisco and the other direction. It's not empty, but we have plenty of capacity. BART also has plenty of capacity within the East Bay. So if we could see some more job growth in the East Bay, that would be hugely helpful for the Transbay Tube. That doesn't mean we wouldn't need a second Transbay Tube one day, but that's something that would really help our system and use the capacity that we already have in our system.
And on the subject of alternatives, Amelia emails in with a question, what about adding more ferry routes? There used to be a ferry out of Berkeley. Would this be a good way to help commuters avoid some of that Bay Bridge traffic? So Jeffrey Heller?
Well, Jim Wunderman, who's the executive director of Bay Area Council, sits on the WIDA board now, and that's the ferry board. And he and they and we all do want to see a major expansion of that, because the infrastructure is already there. It's the water. And building the piers is not that hard. And Ratna mentioned it before as well. We see it as part of the overall planning process, and it should definitely expand dramatically and start serving to the south of the bay, which it doesn't do yet in a meaningful way. But it goes back to something that you said actually before, which is that we have to grow up as a region and begin to be like the rest of the world, where infrastructure is treated as a higher priority. All the major cities in Europe, the way China is doing it now, the way the Japanese do it now. And we have to get away from relying on our cars and thinking there's a clever tinkering we can do to fix the car problem, which we cannot fix. And even the buses on the highways is not a fix. There has to be meaningful public transportation, rail transportation around this region. So we need to look forward to that as an inevitable solution.
And we mentioned briefly that the construction process may have some negative environmental impacts. You know, for example, if we just rested the concrete slabs on the bay floor. Ratna, I'd love to hear from you about the potential environmental impacts of building a second transbay tube. Is this something that Spur has thought about? Are there ways that we can think about how to mitigate potential negative environmental impacts from the construction process?
Well, I think the bay is the number one issue environmentally that we have to think about. But as Jeffrey mentioned, modern construction technology helps us a lot on that to improve upon the past. The other impact I think that's important to think about actually is not is a little different, which is the neighborhoods where you build the stations and where you're tunneling. And I think there's a unfortunate legacy from the first time around constructing BART in the downtowns, and there's we're still recovering from some of that. So we can improve upon it again. We know a lot more now on how to do it and how to actually include people in the planning process in a way that wasn't happening in that era. But I think that's another area that we have to pay a lot of attention.
And on the subject of alternative measures, Rebecca, you had mentioned the possibilities of bus-only lanes, some other things that we can do in the interim. I mean, even if we had a green light to build this, we know it's not going to be something that's going to happen right away. And we also know BART right now is dealing with a real surge in ridership. Have there been discussions about what we would call maybe congestion pricing, where you would make it more expensive to ride BART during those peak times and take advantage of excess capacity in those off-peak hours to help provide more capacity from the existing tube?
We've discussed it, and the board has decided against it, because what we found from other agencies that have had, you know, peak pricing is you have to charge a lot more to really shift a significant amount of people. And we really don't think that's fair, because some people can move their work schedule, but there are a whole lot of people who can't. It's a big penalty to them, and BART fares already aren't very cheap. So we just don't think that's fair. Something we are trying out is some incentives to urge people to use BART in the off-peak, and that's something we'll be rolling out in the next few months. And we're hopeful that that will shift some people. Singapore did this, and in their program that they got people to enter into, they had 7.5% of the people in the program move to off-peak. So we're hoping to do something similar to that. And if that works out, that would be really huge. It sounds like a small percentage, but when you think of those crowded cars, it's a really big percent that would change.
So we're looking at more carrots than sticks to try to deal with the capacity issues. So we got a question from Mike, who asked, references an earlier discussion we had about the governance structure, who would be in charge of this. And he wants to know why there are so many little fiefdoms, as he puts it, in charge. Why don't we have one cohesive board that would cover transportation across the Bay Area as a region, given our regional commuting, you know, working and housing patterns? So, well, Jeffrey, do you want to take that one?
Well, I'll start it anyway. It is our history and our heritage that we have individual fiefdoms throughout the Bay Region probably for more than 100 years. And the addressing of that is actually something that's dramatically taking place right now with MTC looking at combining with ABAG and trying to get a more regional emphasis to things. And again, it's all about governance and structure of government. So we as a population in the Bay Region have to support that in order to get the political structure to head that way in a reasonable fashion.
And just for our listeners, ABAG is the Association of Bay Area Governments. It is one of our regional entities, although maybe not with as much decision-making power as some might like, and maybe more than what others might like. Just want to remind our listeners that you can call and join in on this conversation by dialing 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. So, Ratna, I'd like to ask you about potential opposition to this. As Spur has put out this call for the region to begin thinking about a second Transbay tube, have you already heard from oppositional type voices, or who do you anticipate might be against this kind of project?
I could tell you what those who have concerns, what some of those are. I don't know of any formalized opposition, but some of the concerns are one that's been mentioned today, which is that it's going to be a distraction or take away from more immediate needs, and we've got to figure out how to get past that and work on both things at the same time. There's the typical geographic competitiveness that this is a project that benefits. There's maybe a presumption that this project benefits San Francisco the most, or San Francisco and Oakland. What about the rest of the region? That's a very Bay Area conversation. And there are the concerns, the skepticism that it's needed in the face of technology, which I would definitely disagree with. I think rail has shown over and over again it's a pretty essential way to grow a metro region. Those are just a few of the ones that come to mind.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Rebecca, do you have thoughts on that as well, about where you think why people might object to this kind of a project?
I haven't heard much complete opposition to the idea of doing the project someday. I think there's not clear agreement on when to do it and not clear agreement on how big of a priority it is compared to everything else. If the Bay Area got all of the transportation funding we needed for all of the projects we need, maybe there would be very little opposition to it because we'd be having a different conversation. But we're in a situation right now where transportation funding is very competitive. It has not increased very much over the past couple of decades, while transit ridership across the country has increased quite a bit. So we're all fighting over less money for more riders. So that's the problem we're facing and the decisions we have to make.
So I'd like to welcome another caller. This is Mark from San Francisco. Mark, thank you for joining us.
Yes, I had two questions. The first question is, on the new cars that BART has ordered, is the carrying capacity of the cars greater than the existing cars? In other words, will they accept more passengers? And the second question is, I'm visually impaired, and I'm wondering whether the new cars are going to be more accessible for people who have visual impairments. I'll give you an example of that. Some of the announcements of the stations that are made cannot be heard. Sometimes the engineers don't always announce the stations, or you can't really hear the announcement because it varies by car. Secondly, the signage, looking out of the car for visual impairment, is very difficult to see. Some of the stations are dark, some of the signages are not lit, and there is no signage inside of the cars to tell you where you are or which station you are approaching. So those are my two questions.
Thank you, Mark. Let's let Rebecca handle that one as a director on the BART board.
I'm happy to say that we're addressing all of the issues, the very important issues that you just mentioned. In terms of capacity, we're not planning to reduce the seats by very many, but we are reducing the size of them slightly and the configuration so that there'll be more standing room in the cars. Also, the cars are going to have three doors on each side instead of two, and that's going to increase the capacity because people will spread out throughout the cars. You've probably seen this. We're right near the doors. It's very, very crowded, and in the center of the car, there's still people standing, but it's much less crowded. There's more space, so this will spread people out. In terms of, serving people, really everybody, but people especially who are visually impaired, the announcements will be much more clear. The systems are quite old right now, so sometimes it gets very fuzzy, but there'll be automated announcements of the stops, and there'll also be visual announcements in the cars at both ends of the cars of which station is coming next. And where the map is right now in the car, there's going to be a digital map that will show you where you are on the BART line and which station you're approaching. And in terms of the stations, we are working on replacing all the signs at all of the stations, and that's based on grant funding, but several of the stations have had signs replaced, and they're a lot better, a lot easier to see.
So thank you, Mark, for that call. So we've had a very sort of center of the Bay centric discussion in terms of Oakland, San Francisco, connecting them with a second tube. A listener from San Jose wants to know what is being done to help bring that connection to San Jose. And Jeff Heller, I know you were just down there, and also Ratton, I'd love to hear from you too on this.
Well, let me just start it briefly by saying that my conversation with the mayor just this afternoon was about that. And or that was one part of it, and that is to make sure that the priorities for the whole region are addressed, and that there isn't robbing Peter to pay Paul, where large projects appear suck the money out from down there, and I think that has to be part of the grand plan and the grand implementation, if you will.
So quickly to Ratna.
Yeah. So as the caller may know, BART to San Jose and onto Diridon Station Santa Clara is pretty far along in planning and needs just some money, more or less, to finish the job. And they're finishing some new environmental work on that. And when that happens, and if it happens on schedule, being 2024-25, that it goes all the way, then there'll be a continuous BART connection all the way to the core, again, adding riders. All these additions to the end of the lines are adding riders to that same core, upping the need for a new crossing. But we also really need to upgrade Caltrain. Beyond electrification, the frequency of the trains, and Caltrain can actually be even better than the BART we know, which is a multi-decade-old technology. So let's keep that whole loop in mind.
So we're coming to the end of our show, but I'd love to just get very quick closing thought from each of you. If your listeners out there care about this, what do you think they can expect for next steps? So quickly to you, Jeffrey.
Well, I think the one point that hasn't been discussed really that I think is extremely important is that part of this grand scheme of making everything work is to have an adequate, an excellent feeder system to these heavy rail lines, so that there's a good deal of convenience getting to them, and it'll keep people out of their cars.
And Rebecca, quickly?
I'd agree with that, and I think the challenge is going to be over the next decade figuring out a balance between the near-term needs and the long-term needs and finding all the funding we need.
Final word from Ratna?
I'm going to put a plug here for integrated fares. We should have a Bay Pass that allows you to use all these multiple systems and doesn't require us to build a big capital project.
All right, great. Well, that's City Visions for this evening. My guests were Ratna Amin, Transportation Policy Director at SPUR, Jeffrey Heller, President of Heller Manis Architects, co-chair of the Bay Area Council's Transportation Committee, and Rebecca Saltzman, a director on the BART board since 2012, representing District 3. Thanks so much to all of you for joining me this evening. For a link to this and other City Vision shows, to let us know what you thought about tonight's program, and to subscribe to alerts and download podcasts, visit the City Visions page on KALW.org. Our engineer this evening was Debbie Kennedy. Tonight's show was produced by Chris Nooney. Join host Joseph Pace next Monday as he examines proposals to reconfigure transportation routes in San Francisco. This is Ethan Elkind. Thanks for listening. Good night, and have a great week.